This is CliffCentral.com.
This is it, the Business Masterclass. I'm Adrian Groenewald, with me, Richard Angus. Hey, Richard.
How's it, Adrian? How are you doing?
Don't let that calm voice fool you. He just stormed in here. You hardly sat down with his earphones on. All right, yes, today with USB Ed, they provide some fantastic individuals, experts, who then come in and discuss principles with us. And then the second half of this Business Masterclass, we zoom in on an SME owner. And today we've got a very interesting SME owner. We'll tell you more about her as we get closer to the next half hour. Last week was on integrity and leading by example. I love how it followed on the hour session with Thuli Madonsela. And that was also an interesting download, that podcast, Integrity and Leading by Example. Today's theme, customer delivery models, how to retain customers. So, Richard, it's kind of over to you. I'll just disrupt it every now and then. And, of course, just now our SME owner will join us. Mm. Belinda, welcome.
Thank you. You have nice been to be back. Yes.
Good to have you back here in the studio.
Good to have you back, Belinda. So I guess the question, I mean, customer retention. Why do customers actually leave us? Now, I saw some research that said the following. They said 68% of customers leave because they're unhappy with the service they receive. 14% leave because they're just unhappy with the product or service itself. And then 9% just decide they're going to use a competitor for whatever reason. I mean, what do you see out there in terms of customer behavior? I mean, you work in the space extensively. What do you see as why people are packing up and going somewhere else with their hard-earned rands?
So I think it's, if you look at, there's a number of reasons, and one of them being, if you look at what's happened, is we as customers have far more choice than we've had before, a lot more.
Okay.
So customers don't have to put up with bad service anymore. They just merely move along to the next supplier that's going to provide that service.
Okay. Now, I mean, you say that quite glibly, you know, we just move along, but how easy is it for a customer to move? Is it always that simple?
I think it's getting easier and easier. I do think it depends on the customer, and it depends on the organization and what we're talking. So obviously banking is a little bit more tough.
Oh, don't talk to me about that. I had a client who had a Nedbank business bank account, and I'm sorry, I'm going to do this to Nedbank, and it took Nedbank 4 months to close a business account for my client. And I just looked at this and I went, Nedbank, you know what, you guys need to catch a wake up in terms of customer service, because I can guarantee you one thing, no one who was involved in that process at the client, we were leaving Nedbank for a very valid reason, and it was also service related. I can guarantee now there's not one person who was involved in that process who will ever touch Nedbank again because of the experience of actually doing the account closure. If they'd done it snippily and smartly, maybe we would have felt less than aggrieved. But now, sure, we won't be recommending them again in a hurry.
F&B makes it sound very simple to change banks.
Well, unfortunately, we were moving from Nedbank to F&B.
They didn't like that.
And it's the good old barrier to entry conversation, I guess. Mm. But I do think, you know, when you don't get it right, please eat humble pie and just make it easy for somebody to go somewhere else if they're not happy. So, yeah.
So I think that's exactly it, if you don't get it right. And customers have choice. They know they have choice. And as an organization, if you're not continuously trying to understand what is it that your customer wants and values, you'll find that they'll switch quite easily.
Mm. Now, I mean, fundamentally, you know, we talk about bad service, and I mean, I've always witnessed this. You have the good old, well, this is where you phone to complain. The good old, let's call it, complaints line. What is your experience with the, let's call it, the generic complaints line type of approach to customer retention? Because I think a lot of large corporates seem to think that the way you retain customers equals your customer complaint area. Mm. I mean, I don't see it that way. What is your experience with this?
So I think having your customer having access to the various mediums to complain, and I think customer call centers are one way, but there are a number of ways. If you look at online, how many people tweet, how many people use Facebook to complain. I think if an organization sees that as a positive way to receive feedback opposed to just, you know, utter complaint, a customer complaint in a negative way, I think it's to their disadvantage. Seeing it from a positive perspective that it is feedback and we can do something about it is possibly the better option. So I don't think that any organization is doing themselves justice if they don't have that and have multiple ways in order to communicate or for their customers to communicate back to them. Mm. And it goes back to, you know, what is that experience, even when dealing with a complaint?
Mm. Yeah, now, you and I spoke earlier about there is another reason why customers leave you. And you were mentioning, and I'd like to chat about that, is this whole principle of, well, something changes in a customer's world. Talk to me about how that changed, because we are in an ever-changing environment. How does that influence and affect customer retention?
So I think it goes back to, again, is managing those expectations and trying to understand what is it that your customer values at a particular time. So as you go through your own life cycle, and we're just talking consumer specific at the moment, but as you go through your life cycle, your needs change. And an organization needs to be connected with their clients enough to understand how those needs change. And if you're not in touch with your customers, again, customers require a lot more interaction with organizations than they ever did before. They want you to know them and know them well. Mm. So if you look at the various touch points, are they giving your client an opportunity to interact with them and then understanding how their needs change over time? Mm. I think that's quite important. Just looking at life cycles, a very simple, my needs, and we used the example of a car earlier. You know, my vehicle requirements today is different for my vehicle requirements as I get older. You know, when you're young, you want a fast car. As you get older, you want a safe car, you know, for your kids or whatever it is.
And then you get to your 40s and you want a fast car with no roof again.
That's men, yeah.
Porsche or whatever.
The Porsche, the Lamborghini, yeah. The midlife crisis. So, yeah, so a customer's identity in terms of value identification also can have an impact on the whole customer retention world. And unfortunately, I guess, if you're not talking to that value proposition that the customer identifies with, no matter what you do, you're going to lose that customer. You don't have too much of a choice, it would seem, unless you're prepared to adapt your product environment to meet with that specific need. And you can't be all things to all people, and we know that.
Absolutely. And I think this also goes back again to the experience. So, you were mentioning the bank earlier, and I think it's often not necessary what they're offering, but it's often the experience. Mm. And again, if you value experience more than the service, then you're going to go with the experience. So what do you value at a particular time? Mm. That's important.
Now, let's talk around kind of some of the things that crop up in the whole world of customer retention. I mean, one of the things that's always kind of come to the fore is this whole principle of set your customer expectations up front. I mean, what is involved in setting expectations? I mean, why would you want to set expectations? Do you have to set expectations? Give me some insights into that.
So I think it's less than setting up expectations, but I think it's more about managing those expectations and understanding. So you understand your client's requirements and you understand what their expectations are. And then once you understand that, then you manage accordingly. So it's that whole principle of not trying to overpromise and underdeliver, but rather over-deliver and under-promise. And that's what we're saying. So if you say something's going to be delivered at a particular time, then deliver at a particular time.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than waiting for somebody's promised delivery and it just doesn't happen. Oh, I can think of nothing worse.
Exactly. And the customer requires us to be honest. We want an honest, you know, if something's gone wrong, we're all human, we understand. Mm. But then, you know, let us know.
Mm. I often say that, you know, if something does go wrong, apologize quickly and say what you're going to do to fix up. People don't expect you to be inhuman and a machine. They do expect that human frailty and issues to happen. But they expect you to be humble enough to accept that something went wrong and tell people what you're going to do to fix it.
Absolutely. And I think as a whole, we're quite a forgiving nation. I think we're okay that mistakes happen, but we want that.
Now you raise an interesting question or comment. You say we're a forgiving nation. Do you think customer retention is different in South Africa to how it is in the rest of the world? What are you seeing in terms of the international benchmarks there?
I think it's definitely based on cultural issues. I think that every culture has a different view on customer retention and customer value, because we value things differently. So some, I think in some countries you'll find that service is kind of more at the forefront of value, where in some countries and some cultures it's more about price. So I think it's very much about that. So culturally, I do think we do differ, and I think organisations, especially multinationals, need to be able to adjust to each culture and nation.
Mm. The one thing I'm always that amazes me is just how in some cultures, for example, the pricing point. I mean, I know if you go to some environments, you're not meant to pay the price that's on the item. It's just almost considered impolite. You have to negotiate. Mm. That's part of your idea of value to the proprietor on the other side. Yet I'm sure if you walked into some other establishments in the US, for example, and tried to haggle over the price, they would be deeply insulted. So to that point. Now, I mean, what is the position in terms of customer retention and the expectation that you are the expert? I mean, is that part of, let's call it, the customer experience, that customers, when they don't feel you're the expert, they start having questions? I mean, is that something that plays in the whole customer retention space a lot?
I think because we're in the information age, I think customers are able to tap into a lot more information about their products and services and how things should be done than previously. So that puts all organizations under pressure, because your customer's really informed. So when you're not delivering, they can point out you're not delivering, you're not doing what you said you would do.
It reminds me of, and caution organizations, be careful of this, is putting out promises on things like the internet. We deliver within 24 hours, or we deliver within 30 minutes. I mean, the standard pizza delivery kind of scenario. I mean, I often wonder how many free pizzas actually fly around, because delivery times are not as controllable as one may think. So if you make a commitment and say, I'm going to deliver your pizza within 30 minutes of the committed time or from dispatch, if you get that wrong, you've got a huge expectation to now meet, otherwise people are further dissatisfied. It's not only the late delivery, but now you're not meeting up to your, let's call it, satisfaction guarantee, which is also an issue.
Can I quickly jump in here? I mean, if I understand you, Belinda, when a customer walks in these days, you cannot assume that they are totally uninformed and that you know more than them. Someone who wants to buy a car, for example, the research they've done about their BMW may far exceed the normal first-time salesman and buyer conversation. So I guess the whole approach is different to how you impress customers these days, to how you make them have a good experience when they come in. So if I come in and I've done my research, I'm not like that, but a lot of guys are, about this car, and I walk in and this guy is giving me the most basic things, I'll be irritable. I wouldn't enjoy the experience. So first establish, okay, what level of information do you have about this product? And then go from there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it goes back again to what does the customer value at that particular time, and knowing your customer, knowing
Correct.
Them well.
The right questions at that moment. It's not just the expertise thing, but the right questions as they walk in. So tell me, how much research have you done? How much do you know about this product, so that I can equal your level of understanding, and then we go from there.
Yeah, you also have to be careful that you don't treat the client like they do know what they're doing, and they say, I've done my research, when in actual fact you don't carefully understand. And I guess you can ask the right kind of leading questions and assess where they're at, because you've got to be really careful as well that you don't assume a level of knowledge and then only to discover that you've got a few myths rolled up into that knowledge base, and you've got to deal with that as well along the way. So it makes selling a little more difficult in today's day and age of information flow.
No, absolutely. And I think if you look how we have evolved, your customers are more informed. Organizations need to be more on top of their game. It makes that whole customer services level and expectation a little bit more tricky than before. So you really have to be on top of your game and understand what is it like to be a customer, experience what is it like, what touch points do they go through.
Now, I find that comment very, very relevant, because I think if you were to ask most executives in companies and even people in lower levels of management that are responsible for customer interactions what it's like to be a customer in the organization, they actually don't know. I'll never forget, there was a comment in a biography about Avis, and they made the comment, they said they had a process where every executive had to spend a day of the year serving customers at the counter. And the person commented and said it wasn't uncommon to see a senior executive run for cover at the first customer complaint. And it's you know, you ask yourself the question, you know, and we all say, oh well, yeah, phone your call center or whatever, but and do a bit of mystery shopping and the likes. But how often do you serve a customer? I mean, how many CEOs actually sit in their call center, even if it's for a few hours in a year, to actually understand what their customers are asking for?
You have CEOs who go through the financial side of the business, become the CFO and then the CEO, and they actually never really went through the ranks of the business. So what kind of decisions are made around customer service and retention, and what we say here, the theme of customer delivery models?
Yeah.
So just to that point, I was reading about a case study earlier, and an organization like Amazon, what they do is that they entrench that customer-driven value from the start. So when you join the organization, every employee needs to know, regardless of what your role is, needs to know how to deal with customers. And the more they learn to deal with customers from early on, they understand what the culture of that organization is. And I think it's driven from a cultural perspective.
Now, I mean, when we talk about a culture of customer engagement and quality retention, the word trust has to come up somewhere in the picture. I mean, how important is trust and relationship building in customer retention? Does it? I mean, I would imagine it features quite highly. I mean, I know personally, if I don't trust a provider, the ability to retain me as a customer drops significantly. Does trust feature in all products? Does it only feature in some? What's your experience there?
So I think it goes back to something I talk about a lot in class, and that's very much around, if you look at yourself as an individual, your relationship and your emotional connection with the products and services around you. So when you go shopping for a product or service that your parents bought when you were living at home, you literally take it off the shelf without thinking, because it's that instant trust. It's not a negotiation. You don't think about what is it that you, how much you're paying for it. You know, I'm buying this because it works. So I think trust is really important, but it does talk very much to having that emotional connection. And organizations that are connected to their clients find that they'll have loyal customers, providing there's that, you know, are they in touch with what we're looking for? Do they really know me, and are they delivering to my needs? So relationship is really, really important.
Okay, now let me contrast that with the principle of making use of automation, because often, I mean, I tell you, if I see another email in my inbox saying, thanks for staying with us last night from the City Lodge or the Sun International, whoever you've stayed at, or thanks for using our rental car or thanks for flying this one or that one, can you rate our service? I kind of go, I really don't have time for this. But the reality is, that's the methodology that people are using nowadays to collect customer feedback. And they go, customer feedback equals, I now know what I need to do to retain my customers. So
But yet we don't want to fill that in because it's a pain.
Yeah. So I find it irritating. It sounds like you do too, Audrey.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Where's the place of automation in this whole customer retention space? Do we or don't we?
So because everyone, sorry, Belinda, yeah. everyone is doing that. I go service my car and then they come with that response. I stay somewhere and they come with that response.
Don't you just love it when they when you have your car serviced and they phone you once?
Twice.
Then twice times. And then three times. I only had my car serviced once. I'll give you feedback once.
Yeah. Mm.
If you phone me the third time, I'm actually reserve the right to be quite rude to you. I'm
even
sorry.
The second time, yeah.
So it goes back to that personalization thing again. We need to ask our customers, how do you want to engage? Mm. How do you want us to engage
now,
with you?
Now, that's, yeah, so there's a critical thing because I don't remember being asked, well, probably was somewhere on that form with all the little fine print, how you want your feedback, or how you want, you know, if we want to know how your stay was, can we email you? It was probably somewhere in the terms and conditions of 0.2 font size, but yeah, okay, so ask,
and again, like, as I said, your needs change, so. You know, if he had asked you 3 years ago, you would have been okay with it. But now that you're inundated with different devices and information and more organizations are using it, your needs may have changed. So you need to, remember I said earlier, you need to be in touch with your customers on a continuous basis.
But this strikes me now, and I know this is exceptionally simple. But even if they called me today and showed that they're in touch with my experience by saying, Mr. Groenewald, I know this is an irritating call for you. I know you receive lots of these, but we really want to improve our service. So please can I ask you 3 questions about your car service or about your stay in our lodge? So, okay, they acknowledge it's an irritating call for me. I'm busy. But because you show that you understand me and that this is now part of the social trend, I'm going to actually entertain you. Mm. It's a simple thing like that. That would actually stop me, and I would actually listen.
Mm. But
so now it's how you approach it rather than the fact that you do it, right? Mm. It's how you approach it rather than the fact that you do it.
Exactly that. I think what's important is that you're able to empathize and connect with a customer.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's that connecting with a customer to say, I have empathy with you. I understand that this is irritating, and that's a whole connection thing.
Mm. But also trying to identify the other means that you might get a better response from the customer on. So, for example, send me an SMS and ask me to rate your service 1 out of 10, or a simple, would you promote? I mean, I actually love the whole net promoter kind of measurement. Would you recommend me to your friends and family?
Mm.
For me, that's a key question, you know, if yes or no. Mm. And that can be answered in an SMS. Press 1 for yes, 2 for no, kind of story.
What kind of research intelligence do you get from that, you know, in terms of improving the future? Mm-hmm. So now if you get 80% yeses, then you say, okay, I'm actually okay with my current customer service, but I'm not necessarily, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, we the whole net promoter type of thinking is simply, you know, take those that are comfortable or promoters of you, take off those that aren't, and look at your net score and see how that's moving.
Yeah, so I think it goes back to what we do with information and how we see information, how we use information, and if you look at the integrity of the information, what is that going to give you? So I think as a customer set requirement, I think it's important that you regularly interview your customers, find information out on a regular basis, and use that information, but really use that information. Not just, will you recommend me? Why would you recommend me? Mm-hmm. Who would you recommend me? What about a service is what you're interested in?
But do it differently. In fact, say, if you participate in this, we'll give you 10% off in your next car service.
Mm.
Or in your next stay, when you come, we'll give you a free breakfast or free dinner. Or, you know,
reward the feedback.
Reward the feedback.
Yeah.
Just do something different. Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. We know the answer to that.
Mm.
So it's about getting more innovative when it comes to these sort of standardized things. Things that people think, there are organizations out there who think, boy, we're now trendy. We have our automated system in place. Wow, we fought so hard for it. And they forget, wait, they're still behind the curve. They now have to do that in a very special way for you and I to be pleased by what they're doing.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what about the whole question of, okay, so we want to retain customers, Do we build that whole, the whole question of customer retention into key performance matrix measures and KPIs, KPIs, whichever you choose, around customer service into the scorecards of various people in the business? And if so, who?
So 100%, Richard. I think it talks to how do you get your entire force mobilized and how do they all live the customer experience process. And again, organizations that are doing this, I know, for example, Microsoft have this thing around being obsessed with a customer. So everything they do is about customer obsession. Literally every proposal they put out, every engagement they have is all around customer obsession. Disney, for example, have another, you know, you walk through Disney, the Disney park, and if there's a piece of paper that's dropped, doesn't matter who picks it up, as long as it gets picked up. So it's ingrained in the staff. It's ingrained in everything they do. It's part of their DNA. And I think if it's part of the organizational DNA, it literally becomes part of what you as an organization stand for.
Yeah, and just to go to SME, sorry, Richard, so how do you create that DNA? I guess from the start. From the start, you as an owner, as the first person you employ, the second person, third, that's where you're going to, that's your DNA core. And then as it spreads from those individuals, that's, you know, they are the ones who will create that culture, isn't it? Rather than just surviving and never thinking later on in my business, I would like an inherent DNA of customer retention and culture or service. And then it's difficult to change it.
Yeah.
Start from the beginning if that's something you want and need.
If you think of an SME, for example, they start off with their business one man show and off they go. They forget that you need to actually create values that you need to live by, and then pass that on to anyone that you employ thereafter. So it's your behavior that is driven. So you're 100%, but we're just trying to operate, and we forget about how are we treating our customers.
And I think if you want to truly retain your customer, the reality is that if the customer doesn't experience the fact that you as the business owner in an SME and your senior team actually value them and want to retain them, well, you've got a problem. You know, and often you see organizations where people, let's call them the rank and file of the business, the guys operating in the business, are quite customer centric perhaps and are focused, yet the other, let's call it middle management or more senior leaders in the business and business owners perhaps are almost dismissive of customer issues. The reality is that attitude permeates very quickly through the organization. I mean, you talk about the Disney experience with the trash, the rubbish. The reality is, you know, how many times have you heard this statement? It's not my job. Okay. Now, if you've got a it's not my job culture, well, the piece of rubbish is going to lie on the ground in at Disney, when we know it doesn't. So there, the attitude is, it's everybody's job to ensure a clean environment for our clients and our customers. You know, is your culture one of, well, see if you can blame somebody else in the organization, and if you get it right, well, then that's fine. You know, ultimately, if the customer suffers, well, tough. But at least I'm not to blame. And I think that's quite an indictment, I guess, on some organizations. They allow that culture to permeate in the environment.
No, absolutely. I think, and I just bring it back to the SME conversation again, I think the onus is on you. You started this process. People buy from you because of you, or they do business, you know, with your organization because of you. So you need to create that DNA. And I think if you then take it back to the corporate environment, if it's not driven from leadership and you do not behave or drive behavior from the top, then how do you expect the rest of the organization to follow suit?
So I think there's an important takeaway from that is customer retention is actually an attitude that starts at the top, like many business elements, but it's not something that you can blame on somebody else in the organization. If it's not happening for you as a business, look at yourself as the owner and ask yourself the question, what is my attitude? What is my approach? What message am I sending to my team to engage this differently? Then I guess just in closing, I mean, there's so much online presence nowadays that's out there. I mean, we live in the world of online. I mean, how do you go about building a relationship online with clients that ensures that you're able to retain clients properly?
I think it's important, again, not to make the assumption that everybody's happy to go online. I think it's important for you to distinguish which customers are happy to go online and which not. So, again, as you said previously, you cannot be everything to everybody. So I think it's important to be able to distinguish between your customers, you know, which are the customers that are prepared to go online. Mm. And if you only going to service customers that are, because that's what your business offering is, then the online process is what your customers are asking for. So then that becomes an easier conversation. But don't assume that your customers are happy to always go online. Even though we're moving into a more automated environment and probably, you know, are there already, I think it's important not to make that assumption.
Mm. Now, I mean, finally, just as a final closing comment, I mean, ultimately, customer retention is about going, let's call it going above and beyond. I mean, how far do you push it in terms of, is the customer always right and are they worth retaining? How do you, and I know it might sound harsh, but sometimes you don't necessarily want to retain that one client. And then what?
No, absolutely.
So logic, customer's not always right. I mean, yeah. It's impossible.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's a decision that you need to make as an organization and an SME, is when is it a good time to walk away? If it's exhausting your resources, if it's not serving your purpose, then you walk away. And no, customers aren't always right. However, I think it's how you deal with the customer and how you walk away that's important. Mm. And how you deal with customers. Because at the end of the day, you have a reputation to manage. And it always goes back down, you know, back to your brand.
So consider your brand, consider your reputation, and make sure that when you work to retain the customers, that you're retaining the right customers. And if you do have to say goodbye properly.
Absolutely.
Depends on whether it's the Guptas or not, you know? And if you're a bank or not.
Let's not open that. Time's up.
Thank you so much. We appreciate that, Belinda Wagner. You're staying with us, and Richard Angus.
Thank you.
That's Belinda. The business skills conversation in association with USB Ed. And next up, we have a special entrepreneur from up north in Africa, now here in South Africa based, but you listen to her message and it's like a... Yeah, it just sounds so good, man. It's like an English message and a French message. But next up, we look at it's our SME feature, Tanya Mukwamu, MD of Pluratone. We'll see how we say that correctly. That's up next. We're going to talk about her business, their business, how they've built it, started from nothing, and a little bit about her career and background. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.